League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
You are listening to the QPR Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with the Ranger Things podcast, Mr. Gareth Dixon, and returning Julian Monaghan. So good to see you in the studio. He's already given me a bit of stick, but I'm not going to answer him straight away off the bat. And I'm just going to say, we have to be careful now, Gareth, because we dance when the intro starts. Now the camera's in the studio.
I know.
No one wants to see us dancing because it will go viral, mate.
It's a bit of a concern. Well, it's a producer. There should be a camera on the producer. Every producer doesn't fail to dance to the intro.
Yeah, and should be a wall of shame.
Still going.
Oh, yeah, that's a shameful dance. <Yeah. that one.
laughs> Julian, no moves from you. I'm disappointed. Where was your dancing moves?
I'm just very calm. Sort of.
Very calm, composed.
Composed. Yes.
Calm, composed, and collected. Well, we are going to be talking all things QPR. Like we said, since we last spoke, two games, a disappointing loss in the League Cup, but a brilliant win in the Championship away to Sheffield Wednesday on the weekend, going 1-0 down, but quick fire two goals from the man of the moment, it seems, Mr. Jordan Hugill. We're going to be talking all about that 2-1 there, of brilliant 3 points. We have to start though with the game against Portsmouth, because although maybe League Cup progression wasn't top of the agenda, it's not the ultimate aim this season, a good chance, I would say, to progress another round further, beating Portsmouth. And until they scored, QPR, once again, a lot of possession, a lot of chances. Fair to say, I don't want to say dominating the game, but were the team who had the most going for them. But once again, QPR giving away a penalty. I know it's the theme at the minute, QPR shooting themselves in the foot and maybe being their own worst enemy. But let's talk about the Portsmouth game and how you felt the team's performance were. Gareth, I'll start with you. What did you think as a whole?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. We dominated the game. Without that penalty, they were never in the game at all.
It turned it, didn't it?
Yeah, it was a naive tackle by Lyson, who came back into the side. I mean, Pompey did look very League One at the time. They looked a different Pompey to the side we played in the FA Cup last year. Malacca played up front for us, started up at top, and the ball didn't stick up there enough. And I think that was the one trouble we had. We created a few chances. Ryan Manning from left back cut crosses. Pugh had a great header. Malacca had a great chance as well. But the ball just didn't stay up there enough. It was a bit kind of basketball-y. You know, the ball was going from one end to another end. We didn't look in any danger on our own third, but we didn't look like it was sticking up there long enough. It was crying out for Hugill, but you can see why he's resting if we look at the result, you know, moving from there. So looking at it, it's like, yeah, you want to create that winning mentality, but, you know, what I found out is no prize money in the Caribou Cup until the semi-finals is 25 grand. And you relate that to, like, probably Nike Worlds for a week, which is just, like,
That's what you earn in about an hour, isn't it? 25 grand.
It's not all about the money, Gareth, mate. It's about the fans. It's about winning. I can't believe you've just said League Cup.
It is for us.
Really? You only want to progress for the money, not because there's fans a chance.
Most teams only really care about it until the semi-final, which unfortunately is a sad reality of that cup. I think the FA Cup may be a bit earlier, but no one really cares about it. And then if there's no prize money either, it starts to make a bit more sense, because that result is just typical QPR. It's losing to a team lower division at home. How many times have we done it with this? Northampton, Carlisle. Rochdale. I can't even remember that one. It's been going on for so many years. And actually, last season, we changed that, because who did we beat? We lost to Blackpool away.
It was the FA Cup. So
maybe that's why they're sitting there going, what's the point? I mean, the thing that impressed me, that actually we could almost change the entire team. I think we made 7 changes for that game. And still the team feels relatively strong, which actually speaks to the strength and depth we have for a change. Because in previous seasons, we've changed the entire squad and you sit there and go, why have I bothered paying to come? Because this team is just not going to win.
But there's been kids out there against lower league opposition who are, it's more in it for them. You know, we've got everything to lose at home against the lower league side. Obviously, Portsmouth, big club in their own rights. But, you know, we've had youngsters out there before who've been a bit naive and just been lost on the occasion against, you know, some grafters from League One and League Two. This wasn't that. Julian Spottom with that, you know, the team out there you thought had enough to get a result. But I just question, did they really want it? You know, did Warburton set his side out to actually go and win that, you know, come what may sort of thing? And it didn't get that feeling. And I think the fans that came back after the Bristol City thumping 3-3, you know, bit of an epic first round cup game, they were a little bit disappointed. Like, well, we're away from these sort of games because this is the sort of performance we see. You've not conned us, but, you know, we've expected more. Fans have said, why are you not here? And then this is the performance. The performance was a little bit under par. It's the worst performance of the season.
Wow, and you did say you dominated the game. If you're dominating games and it was the worst performance of the season, that's still a positive in itself. Not to talk about another team then, just on the Crystal Palace fan show, they got knocked out to Colchester and they said that, did the players really want it? You just said, how much did the QPR players want it? My question to them, my question to you is, why don't players want it? Admittedly, all right, there might be no prize money in the cup. It's not maybe their focus, but how can you not get yourself up for a game? It's still a cup competition. It's a great chance for players who are, you know, not in the league starting 11 to stake a claim, put in a good performance. It's a chance now. You said you've got that depth for the youngsters to come through, still for the players to gel. There's been 15 signings this summer. Why are we not taking it this seriously? Where has that come from, that element?
I think they struggle. I think just to walk in and perform against players that are up for it, I think it's a real difficulty to do that. There was about, I don't even know in attendance actually, I think about 8,000.
I almost question this cup anymore because it's like, you know, when you were younger, it was the FA Cup. That's kind of lost a bit of magic. That's almost like what the League Cup used to be.
Well,
unfortunately, the reality of football these days, Champions League and the globalisation and the TV, just means that people aren't really interested in this cup. And as I say, it only really gets interesting if you make the semi-final or the final, if your reserve team can do it. It happened, I think Wenger was probably the first person that I look at you now. Wenger was the guy, if you remember, who put his reserve team out. I remember McCarthy at Wolves did it and didn't even get fined for doing it, or they talked about fining for it. This cup has kind of lost its way, and I almost think it's just, it's a bit like the Leyland Daff Cup from when I was watching it in the 80s. It feels like it's lost its time and its place in football.
You can't just flick a switch as a player as well. You know, the manager might set his team out as good as these, you know, these two teams we've got now that are interchangeable. It's very hard just to walk out and flick a switch and just turn it on the night, and in a very, you know, three sides of the ground open. Pompey have brought a really good following, as they always do. So I think, I agree with Julian. It's lost a little bit of what it is.
It's sad because it's our one big trophy, and we constantly talk about 1967 and the great players that played there and won, came back, beat a first division or premier as it is now, then being in the third division. Great, it's massive in our history. But actually, it's just, for me, it's kind of lost it.
But if it has lost it, Julian, isn't that sad? You mentioned the history there, but even as a cup, like, we know the way football's going, Champions League, a lot of other tournaments, more games are on TV. But isn't that a shame that a domestic trophy, albeit it's not the FA Cup, has lost a little bit of magic? People don't care, or is this just the way that football's going now?
But look at the prize money. I think, as I say, it comes down to business, doesn't it?
That's the point I'm making, Gav. How sad is that? That, again, it's business taking charge in football.
But we've made that by the saturation of it, by having like football on seven nights a week, by, you know, TV subscriptions to watch it. We've created that. You know,
we've created our own enemy in that product.
We were talking before, Julian, about the salaries, and we're talking about 100 grand a week salaries. And when's the first £1 million a week salary going to come in? And it will come in because we haven't reached that glass ceiling yet. There's still money to be milked out of us as consumers and advertisers and stuff. So we've created this problem. We want to go down there as fans, as QPR fans, and watch an honest performance and a team that competes. And we did that to an extent. It was below
par. They should make it fun. They need to make that game a bit more fun. I don't know how. They tried to do it. You were
chess
right.
Boxing.
You were right a few weeks ago. I couldn't remember whether it was seeded north and south, and we looked it up afterwards. It is seeded. But they need to do it. I don't know. Do they take a player off after every 10 minutes? Do they do something that makes it more
like
interesting?
Like what cricket have done, one day
ball.
Cricket.
Exactly.
Yeah, something. 2020,
exactly.
We need
you've got to reinvent this cup somehow because it's lost its way. No one's interested.
But is it too late? Can we go back? We've just made a rod for our own back,
I think,
really.
It's the money thing. I was really surprised that, man. You know,
I am shocked. I didn't know that.
100 grand for winning it. You don't. 25 grand in the semi-finals, and you get more for the darts. You know what I mean? It's ridiculous.
I know ultimately owners and people run it as a business. They care as a business, but fans don't care. And, you know, players shouldn't care because it's another honour. It's a major silverware. You know, I won this as a player. You want to say, oh, what did you win as a player? Well, I won the League Cup in such and such and fourth. Do you know what I mean? Or
I don't remember ever going to an away ground and hearing someone singing about winning the League Cup at me.
Not necessarily singing, but you can be proud of your club's history. No,
of course. And there have been periods where maybe Blackburn were up there and won it and Leicester won it. And, you know, it's important, and it is important to us and our history. But right now, with everything else, as you say, there's so much TV on, so much football on TV, it just doesn't really have a place, and they have to try and reinvent it. The guys that sponsor it, the guys that run it, should think, how do we make this cup interesting again? Because right now, I mean, I can't remember the last time I went to a League Cup game, even at home. I just don't go anymore, and I've got season tickets. It's just because you turn up and it's like a waste of an evening, especially because we put out the reserve teams. It's usually we lose to a lower league team and the players are not up for it. So how do you change that? It's a tough question.
Well, a few seasons ago, there were plans in place to sort of fine teams and managers for playing a weakened team. You mentioned it there. That never really got off the ground. There's nothing like that now. How can you stop a manager from saying, oh, you know, this is my strongest team, I'm rotating, you know? Who can say where that line is drawn? But Gareth, what can we do then to not lose any more magic?
From the League Cup, there's not much you can do, Charlie, I don't think. I think it has lost it. I remember growing up and Luton win it, I think, in 87. And then Sheffield Wednesday win it in 91. And I remember watching that on TV, on terrestrial TV, free to air. And it's a great thing. And now it's just, I think we've just saturated the market with football. It is, you know, it's a year-round sport now. Back then, it was something to play for. You got into Europe, but, you know, do you still get into Europe winning it?
You do get into Europe in the League Cup. So
but
that
it's
is
like
a
Europa
carrot,
League
but
as well, a little bit. I know there's more money in the Europa League, but it's just, I think it's just a little bit saturated. We didn't play a massively understrength team. He didn't play to lose that. But as I say, I think it's very, only the best teams can flick that switch and just turn it on under 8,000, in front of 8,000 fans. And those boys from Pompey, fair play, they defended well. And
think about last year, we beat Portsmouth 2-0 in the FA Cup and we put a full strength team to do it. This year, we put the reserves out. And the reserves are quite good. I mean, the thing I'm quite good about our strength and depth this season versus last. So that kind of says it all. Why did we put out a completely different team for the same opposition at the same stage? Was it the same stage? Maybe one.
What's that?
Round earlier.
Pompey lost
FA Cup.
Pompey
last
played in
year.
The fourth round, second
fourth round.
So yeah, it's effectively the second round as well.
Yeah. But they have to have a rethink about this cup.
But you play Hugel and he does his knee against them, and you're like, who's going to get the criticism then?
Manager's scared of that then, because then the fans are on the back, the ball are on the back. We've signed a striker who's scoring goals.
Yeah.
You've played him in a game that we don't care about. It's lost his magic. Now he's gone down for the season. Is there a little bit of that fear?
Yeah, it's definitely. And it's usually used as you're not in the team. You're angry about it. Go and prove to me that I should put you in the team. Problem is for us, these guys are all new. We're only 3-4 games in. So they haven't got that yet, because they're still thinking, well, he's probably working out his best team. Whereas we didn't have any of those players who've been on the bench, who were hungry, who were thinking, I've got to go and prove it.
Players ain't fools either, are they? They know that the win against Ipswich, at the Portsby game sandwich in the middle, to a win away at Sheffield Wednesday, where's the importance for them as professionals, as individuals? Are they going to really care about being Pompey in the Caribou Cup? It was a great win, fantastic. Bristol City's a little bit different. They're in your league. We had them on a Saturday, so it's a bit strange anyway. And we played really well in that game. It was a really good game to go and watch. The Pompey game wasn't the greatest game to watch. We had our chances. They styled it out. They defended really well. They nicked. The penalty was just foolish by Leisner. If he hadn't done that, it could have gone straight to penalties and you might have had a bit of excitement and got through. But does it really matter at the end of the day?
Well, maybe the players weren't up for it, but is that why maybe it was so disappointing? Because QPR were the stronger team, were creating chances. But once Pompey got the penalty and got one, it just like QPR were done for the night and were just almost waiting for the game to finish. Was that a little bit disappointing? Or you can understand their frustrations because ultimately, we've just spoke about it, QPR aren't maybe that invested.
Yeah, I think Pompey got that goal and, we got caught out. I mean, you look at Barbet's defending for the second
terrible.
Goal.
I was waiting for you to mention it.
I think, you know.
Was he asleep or did he not know that guy was behind him?
Yeah, I mean, never seen a defender kind of do a recovery run slower than that. It was ridiculous. So they kind of like, you know, they'd accepted their fate in one respect. Or did they even want to go? It's not even extra time now. They're going to get equalised and go penalties. It didn't seem that was there. And we got caught out because no one mentioned Ryan Manning as well. He got caught higher up the pitch trying to chase it a little bit, but it was just a little bit done. Once that goal was in, we knew. And that goal, the second goal was so quick, and their player that scored it was probably their best player on the night. So Yeah,
and you just don't care. It's like you know, you lose a game like that at home in the league, you're hurting the whole weekend.
I was gutted. I mean, there's people there that we went as a group and that, and spent time together, and you don't want to see your team lose whatever your competition is in. I don't care if it's the Shepherd's Bush five-a-side league. I want QPR to win it, but I walked out. I was disappointed because I wanted to go and see that expansive, attractive football go out again. But the reality is, we're not at that level yet. We're going to do it week in, week out, and the consistency is not there.
Well, maybe you didn't see the football against Portsmouth in the League Cup, but you did see it on the weekend because it was a great test of character to come back there. They did get the result. It was 2-1, and it was 3 points.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Love Sport.
You're listening to the QPR Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with the Range of Things podcast, Gareth Dixon and Julian Monaghan. Of course, we're talking everything QPR. We had to start with that disappointing cup defeat, but it's over. The League Cup's over. The magic is gone. So let's focus on the Championship because it has been much better news there. So let's take a look at that. QPR, brilliant victory against Sheffield Wednesday for a number of reasons on the weekend. They're a very good side. Have had some very good results. Tough to beat at home. QPR got an away win. I think it's first back-to-back Championship win since December 2018. Little
well
stat
done
for you there,
yeah,
Gareth.
There you
thank
go
you, please.
Done your own work.
Yeah, you know it. Come on, mate. I'll take it seriously. Not only that, a fantastic test of character, strength to go 1-0 down. A quick fire, 2 goals from Jordan Hugill, who just, you know, you get 1 goal, you get 2, you get 3. Looks the man of the moment. How big a win was this on a weekend, Gareth?
It showed a lot of character. Again, another penalty, which was very dubious, but it was a style.
I was going to come to that. Yeah. Starting on a good foot.
Yeah, but it was the style that we came back in, the style of those 2 goals. It was very clinical, very quick counter-attacking, which is kind of how we set up last year, you know, as a counter-attacking side. So it showed a lot of character, I think, to go up there, you know, 23,000. Very partisan Sheffield Wednesday crowd. They get behind the team, they get on the referee's back, but we did really well to come back, and I was a little bit surprised in the nature and the manner that we did it.
Well, you did come back. When it was 1-0, was you just a bit like, Sheffield Wednesday, they're playing well, 1-0 at home, here we go, we've had a loss in the week, this is going to be typical QPR, now we're down to Sheffield Wednesday. Were you expecting this sort of fight back? I mean, under Warburton, they've been known for this. Last year, QPR maybe not so much.
There's enough quality on the pitch with QPR creativity, I think, for us to get back into it. You've mentioned Sheffield Wednesday. They've had a good start. They were very poor on the day. They were not at the races. Compared, you know, we spoke to Alex Miller last week from Sheffield, and he said about how well they'd done, you know, clean sheets and stuff. They looked poor. They looked disorganised. Iorfa at the back looked shocking. Bannon didn't create anything. He just seemed to want to wind the referee up, wind the crowd up, wind the players up, and just be kind of like malevolent on the pitch, but he didn't really want to do anything with the football. And we just looked a little bit classier at times, and we looked like when we went 2-1 up, we actually managed the game really, really well.
I know that, you know, maybe there's a win is a win, and it's all about 3 points, it's all about a W in that column. But Julian, is there sometimes you can take much more heart from when you do beat a team like Sheffield Wednesday, albeit not that great on the day, Gareth said, but not only to beat them and beat them away from home, these wins, just they count for a little bit more than 3 points, don't they?
Well, for us, they definitely do, because that's 2 away wins this season. I think, I can't remember last season, it wasn't very many, 4 or 5. The season before,
3.
Only a couple. And there was one season recently where we only got 1. So away wins for us are critical. That's 4 games on a bounce we've beaten Sheffield Wednesday. So it's very rare.
Oh, we're all teaming up with the stats here. Yeah. Oh, just give one.
Okay.
It's very rare for me to say we're a bogey team for an opposition, because it's so rare. And they must think we're now a bogey team, short-term bogey team, because I imagine over history they've got more than us, because every time I look that up, the other team has a better record. But I think for me, it's away wins. And also, for me, the possession. So last season, we would win some games, but when we won it, it was much more counter-attack, and we would have 30-35% possession and win some games and often lose. But this season, we have been in the positive side of the 55-60%
easy possession chances
in most games. So So the actually having the ball a bit more this season is so much more refreshing than in the last couple of seasons. So winning away is critical, but I think there's so, as you said, so much more winning away, the style in which we do it, the possession that we have, and the encouragement that you can take for it. Look, we're a team in transition. It's going to take a while for them to gel. I said to you at the beginning, it's one game when we've beaten Stoke, and I was like, let's not get carried away. Still not getting carried away because we've lost a few. But actually, it's going to look like a much more enjoyable season, albeit we'll still probably end up somewhere mid-table. I don't think we're going down. But, you know, it's an enjoyable season just because we're going to look like we get more of the ball and going to do more with it.
I'm going to give you a prediction later, Julian, now that you've slightly changed your tune, now that we are a few more games into the season. He's feeling a little bit more optimistic.
Lost the next one after I said it, anyway.
Let's talk about the equaliser then, because it was Sheffield Wednesday that were on the attack, but what a counter-attacking move. From the length and pitch, the ball's travelled, you know what I mean? The rapid movement there, you know, three players, the turn, the sidestep from Jordan Hugo as well, that goal. You've got to be pleased with that football. It was just absolutely fluid.
Massively. When I saw it at the time, it was Rangel doing that flick, Wells picking up, and it was an amazing pass by Wells. But what instantly hit my head was...
Beautiful through ball, wasn't it?
It was a great through ball, but you need the runner to do that. You need someone willing to make those runs in behind. And you don't necessarily associate that with Hugo. You know, he's a hold-up player. He's strong in that. His movement's fantastic. You know, he got in there and in a very composed finish. Both finishes were very composed. So that was very, very pleasing. But it was a great ball by Wells. And he was a little bit despondent to come off, not like Sadio Mane style. But Wells did look a little bit aggrieved to come off. But he certainly played his part in that victory, in that goal there. He ran around. He was a nuisance. And it's good to see him playing in that behind the striker and not taking on the glory position and to be happy with that.
And two up front, because last season we played one up front a lot. And, you know, it was either Matt Smith or Wells or sometimes Hemed. It was never like two, very rarely two. And the good thing is that the manager's kind of looked at it with one up front recently and it hasn't worked. Play two up front with the five or the three at the back, depending on what you say. I think he switched to that in the previous game and it got a bit better.
Yeah, we're going to half time.
And yeah, so that got a bit better. And then he's taken that into the next game. And actually, if our two strikers are linking up well and Wells is prepared to not be the out-and-out striker, you know, there's a good possibility that could gel over the next few games too. Yeah. I always like having two strikers on the pitch, even if one's a bit withdrawn, rather than just having the lone striker on his own. Always frustrates me. You need good service for that to work.
Well, I don't know the general feeling of last year, but maybe going down in past seasons, one where you think, oh, fearing the worst, could it get worse? But this season, it seems to be much more of a new feeling, especially under Mark Warburton. I know it's very early days, as Julian will always point out, but did you feel not only at 1-0 down, we can get back into this game, but as soon as it was 1-1, if anyone's going to go on to win this, regardless of how poor Sheffield Wednesday were, it's going to be us. And if that is a feeling that you're feeling already in this championship season, that can only bode well for the rest of the season, can't it, Gareth?
I think if you dominate possession, you're comfortable on the ball, the players are, you know, playing in a certain way. They do this kind of one-touch passing out their back sometimes and they look comfortable doing it. Last season, they tried it under McLaren and they didn't look comfortable doing it, which is a huge difference. I think you get that feeling that you're actually in the game and you're not on the back foot. Playing on the counter-attack, it's edge of the knife stuff, isn't it? You know, you're just sitting there going, waiting, hopefully don't concede. We've got to defend really resolutely. And then you go and nick one on the counter-attack. But that wasn't... We did score counter-attack goals, but we had the class and the style to do it. We knew what we were doing, executing a plan, which feels different to just sitting back, sucking the pressure up, and then trying to nick something on the break and having 30% possession. You know, you don't want to be in football matches with 30% possession, 40% possession. It's not a good place to be because you haven't got the ball, so you're never going to score a goal without it. It's different. It's changed. So we felt comfortable. I felt aggrieved to be 1-0 down, and I felt in the other games that we've lost, I felt aggrieved to lose them. I thought Bristol City could have been a draw away. Swansea, it was bad game management with the Barbe penalty straight after the equaliser. This one, it was game management. We were on the front foot. We sensed blood. And we went for it. And that's a change as well.
Well, that can only be a positive thing. Even when you are losing, if you're coming out of the stadium, coming out of the game thinking, I feel really frustrated there because we've lost, but we could have not only maybe got a point, we could have got all three. And, you know, to say that in every championship game, but the possession as well is heavily in your favour. I'm noticing every QPR game, chances created, a lot of possession. This can only lead to a good thing. But to flip it now a little bit to a negative thing, it's almost guaranteed that we know QPR are going to create chances. They're going to score goals. It's a little bit more worrying. You're a little bit more vulnerable at the back, shall we say. But we did touch it on in the Portsmouth, the League Cup game. But how annoying is it, these penalties that QPR are giving up? Because not only are they giving up the penalties. They just feel really soft and really like rookie silly mistakes, and is QPR hurting themselves? How dangerous is this? Because we're not seeming to be nipping it in the bud, as it were, Julian.
Well, it's four and eight, I think. It's four penalties we've given away in eight games. Mm. I would say some of them have been suspect decisions. But anyway, they're penalties. I think the thing that also encouraged me was that he changed it at the back. So Barbe has looked a little bit suspect. He obviously likes him because he's good on the ball, but as a defender, he's looked a bit concerning. The whole thing about Leisner didn't seem to be the sort of player that Warburton wanted. He's not very good on the ball, a little bit slow. Was he going to leave? There was a big rumour he was going to leave, but obviously Monday's come and gone, and he's still there, and he's come out and actually said now he's going to stay. So actually having this five at the back, the three centre-backs, he switched it in the Wigan game. He played that in Sheffield Wednesday. And the penalty against Sheffield Wednesday was really soft. I mean, that one of all of them looked the weakest.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see. But that looks like made us look like we were a bit more assured at the back now, and that made Barbe look a little bit less risky.
Is this a formation you prefer then, three at the back, Gareth?
Well, I think the thing with Warburton, when he came, Brentford fans that we know said he's only got a plan A, and plan B was do plan A better, as in a little bit of a critical
Hey, that's Guardiola.
that's a swipe at Warburton there. I think he's evolved a little bit as a coach, as a person. He's learnt from his time at Rangers and Forest. I've said that already. And he has got this different plan now. He does play three at the back just to change it up. To basically, I mean, Rangel was playing like a right winger. He was gone, and you know he's 30, nearly 37. He was like right up the pitch. And as an opposition team, you think, is he playing fullback? What do I do with that? So I think he's got different plans. I think it's interchangeable, as much like the squad. I think those formations are as well. And I don't think we'll have a settled formation. I think we'll flip between the two we've tried already this season.
Well, someone who might know a little bit about formations, I'm delighted to say Andy Sinton will be joining us next.
Love Sport.
You're listening to the QPR Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with the Ranger Things podcast, Gareth Dixon and Julian Monaghan here. We're talking everything where the R's are concerned. Of course, that disappointing cup defeat to Portsmouth, but the brilliant victory against Sheffield Wednesday on the weekend. Of course, it is the international break. We're going to be talking all about that a little bit later, but I'm delighted to say joining us on the phone now, QPR legend, of course, it is Andy Sinton. Andy, thank you so much for joining us tonight and giving us a little bit of your time. QPR, a great start to the season, playing well in the Championship. It seems like they've already implemented Mark Warburton's plan. Fluid attacking football, creating lots of chances, having a lot of possession. Are you pleased with what you're seeing so far?
Good evening, guys. Very pleased. You know, big summer. We've just seen the club go through, you know, lots of outs, certainly lots of ins, you know, 14, 15 players coming in. So for Mark to be able to, you know, bed them in as quick as he can, get his ideas across, and for the level of performance we're producing, I think all credit to him, his staff and the players.
Andy, I was listening to your commentary on Saturday, and you were talking quite a lot about the height of Rangel, how high up the pitch he was, and Ryan Manning as well. They only get to do that in that formation. You've seen us play the two formations we have this year. Which one do you think is stronger for QPR at the moment?
I think you would have to say, you know, looking at the second half against Wigan, and again, credit to Mark, because I felt the Wigan first half was probably the worst we had played for 45 minutes all season. You know, but Mark's had a look at that. We're 1-0 down. Credit to him, he's made a tactical change, a personnel change, and it seemed to help us. You know, we got higher up the pitch, fullbacks. I think that first goal against Wigan, it's a cross from Ryan Manning, who I think has been excellent since the start of the season. He puts a ball into the box, and it's Angel Rangel at the far post who retrieves it for Naki. Then he goes with that formation up at Sheffield, and again, nothing in the game. Soft penalty gave away, but the second half, I thought we totally controlled the game. Two really good goals. So you would possibly have to say, look, last couple of performances, the three at the back or the five at the back, however you want to term it, but I'm a great believer, you know, formations are, it's what it is, formations, you know, players make it work. I think any good team, any good manager is able to be flexible, able to adapt, be brave enough to do it. And I think we're seeing that. So, listen, it's early days yet, but the signs are promising. And I feel, this is just my opinion, I feel there's more to come, the more they work together as partnerships up and down the pitch, across the pitch. I think there's definitely more to come. Where that can take us, who knows? It'll be days yet.
And Andy, you mentioned 14 new players. Always really difficult to get them to gel quickly. Obviously, as you say, there's more to come. But who has impressed you so far out of those 14? Who's the sort of standout player that you've liked, you've seen some good stuff from?
Well, I'm probably a little bit biased, being an attacking player myself. So I tend to look at, you know, the top end of the pitch. And I don't think... it doesn't surprise me because I really rated him when he was up with Preston a few years ago, Jordan Hugel. You know, it's a compliment when I say he's a throwback to an old-fashioned centre forward. When I say that, as I say, it is a compliment because he's good with his back to goal. He's got a physical presence. He works really, really hard for the team. But the most important thing is a number nine. He scores goals. You know, what's he got, 5 and 6? So he's been a real plus. I'm a great believer. Sometimes you're as good as what you've got up top, and play can build off him. You know, we talk about the youth in the side, and the Berriese. Looks like he's back to the form he showed at the start of last season. Ilias Chira, like, you know, Ilias went out to Stevenage last on the power of good, so he's very creative. So he's come back in. So that's just three, you know. But Ryan Manning, I think you mentioned, has been really, really good in a left wing back role. Great to see Grant Hall, you know, back playing, regular, skipping the team at the minute after a really tough couple of years for Grant with injury and, you know, one thing or another. So they're just a few, but I think, you know, Mark will be the first one to say it's a squad game, and it is, and credit to everyone. Even in the games we lost to Bristol City, you know, they scored the first shot they had, and we committed a horrible mistake to put us out of the game. Swansea at 1-1. I, in my opinion, think there's only going to be one winner, and it's QPR, that we give another silly penalty away. That one goes against us, but I think the pleasing thing for me and our fans is they can see a way, in the word identity is used a lot, but you can see a way that Mark wants his team to play. He wants us on the front foot, he wants us playing in the opposition half, he wants us to try and dominate the ball, and I've said it 3 or 4 times now. It's early days, but it's promising.
Well, Andy, you mentioned that it's early days. We're not getting carried away in the studio, but it has been a positive start. Has that start maybe altered expectations for this season? Do you think QPR can do a little bit better than everyone maybe first thought?
Well, I think so, because, you know, if you look at the start of the season, we're tipped as one of the ones that could be in around the bottom three. And I suppose, you know, if you've been realistic, if you look at the last couple of seasons where we finished, and certainly how we finished the back end of last season, you know, what did we win 2 from 3 games in 20-odd? So has it taken me by surprise? No, not really, because I know the quality Mark can bring and the way he wants to work and the quality we've got in the side. And, you know, credit to Mark, but credit to the guys behind the scenes, Les, Lee Hughes, the owners, you know, because they've had a brave summer where they've had to have a clear out, and maybe that surprised a few. And initially there was a couple of eyebrows raised, but I think there was a clear path of how they wanted to go this year. Mark was obviously came into the job with his eyes fully open, but with a clear plan. And he's done that. And, you know, I think the squad looks healthy. There's competition for places. And that can only be good during a season, but it's a long, hard season. You know, this league's relentless. It's tough. You've got to be at it. I know we got a little bit of a break now, but you've got to be at it Tuesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday. And if you're not, you'll get beat. As we see, it throws up some strange results. But as I say, promising signs. I'm quite enthused by what I'm seeing, and long may that continue.
And Andy, you talked about a plan there, and Mark has a plan. And often as fans, we don't really understand whether it's Mark's plan in terms of the recruitment and the place, or whether it's Les's. Can you give us a bit of insight as to who's sort of pulling the strings on those players that come in, and whether you feel this is really Mark's plan that he's implementing, or whether it's a combination?
I think it's a combination. You know, I'm not privy to, you know, the players they target or the players they sign or the way they want to play. It's not my sort of bag, you know, but I think it's a collective thing. You know, there's the way the club has been over the last couple of years. You know, there's more of an emphasis on bringing the youth through, and you don't have to be a genius to work out where we've been shopping this summer. You know, freeze and loans. You know, I think the club's in a better position now than it has been for the last couple of years to move forward again. So I'm sure at that end of the club, you know, in terms of recruitment, there's lots of conversations. They'll look at what they have in different positions, how they can improve, and how can we get the best out of them? How can we, you know, nurture the youngsters, when to bring them in, when to, you know, get them out as such. You know, got a sprinkling of experience, which I, from my own career, I know the importance of having good, solid professionals, not just experience, but good, solid professionals that are in and around the training ground on a daily basis that the youngsters can look at and watch and learn from. You know, I don't mind saying again, I'll wax lyrical about playing alongside Ray Wilkins. You know, what Ray taught me as a player, not just playing on the pitch, but all the other bits and bobs that goes around with being a good professional, you know, I couldn't put a price on. So I think we've got that in the building. You know, people like Angel Rangel, 36, 37, is a shining example for any youngster who wants to have a long and successful career. You know, how he look after himself, how he trains, how he recovers, how he eats, how he speaks. You know, that for me is invaluable. So whilst we've got these youngsters coming through and we've got bags of talent coming through in the club, they still need these experienced players to I wouldn't say keep them in check, but, you know, to nurture them through. So I think we've got a mix, a really, really good mix of, you know, that youth, that experience, that no fear element, but still with the experience that you're going to need, certainly in the Championship anyway.
Andy, you were someone that scored cracking goals. I remember you was on a VHS that I had. It was called Goals, Goals, Goals. And I used to constantly pretend I was ill to take a day off school to watch that video. And you was on it several times, especially the goal against Man City. I mean, honestly, thank you for getting me through those days when I didn't have the flu. But is it still nice that fans just obviously talk about some of them cracking goals? Because for you, and it's what fans always cherish, those memories, and they were absolute pearlers, weren't they?
Well, thanks for saying that. And, you know, I still get shown them, and my boys still show it one day, or we'll get it up, you know. And, you know, I really look back at my time. Those sort of memories, fantastic memories. Yeah, going back to the old players, we've done over the last 3 years as a club, you know, getting a lot of the former players back, the forever ours, you know, and that's not going to win you a game on Saturday. It's not going to guarantee you a great performance. But what it does, it puts the present in touch with the past, and, you know, and brings everything together. The fans love it. The fans are so supportive. You know, we had Akos back, Akos Bezeki last week. You know, the reception he got was brilliant. And I think I said in my programme notes, you know, to the fans, please, please, please don't underestimate what your love and support does for these older players. Certainly as they get older, they come back and it picks them up. It makes them feel appreciated, which they should be. You know, you are what your history is a big, big part of your club. You know, we should never forget that. Yeah, it's about the future and moving on and doing well. But that's a big, big part. And I think, again, the club have made big, big strides in pulling that together. Fans love it. And, you know, the any club, the fans are the most important thing. You know, without your fans, you don't have a club. Whichever club you are, you know, fans are the most important people at the club. I think we're making big strides to become the club that we were, you know, back in touch with the fans. And I think that echoes. The fans can appreciate what they're seeing on the pitch, you know, that that endeavour, that attitude that we all take for granted, but with us over the years and with many other clubs, you see, it doesn't always go hand in hand. But, you know, we've got that. People playing for the shirt, people playing because they want to be a QPR for the right reasons. And if we get that allowed to good management and, you know, performances on the pitch, we can move forward together. And that's all it is. It's all together.
Well, it's certainly
hierarchy, players, everything together.
It certainly was a treat to talk to you tonight, Andy. Thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your time. I'm sure, hopefully, we'll get a chance to speak to you later in the season. Andy Sinton there, QPR legend, and, of course, scorer of some fantastic goals. We've talked a lot about the last two games for QPR, that disappointing cup defeat, but the brilliant win against Sheffield Wednesday. We have hit the international break, and is this good timing for QPR?
Love Sport.
You're listening to the QPR Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with the Ranger Things podcast, Gareth Dixon and Julian Monaghan. We, of course, were talking all things where the R's are concerned, looking at those two games, the defeat to Portsmouth in the League Cup and that brilliant victory away at Sheffield Wednesday. And it was a delight to speak to Andy Sinton there, former QPR legend and scorer of those fantastic goals. I've absolutely enjoyed it. Loved, should I say, watching that video of him to score some cracking efforts. But we do have to now, to Gareth smiling, he's laughing.
I'm laughing at the fact that you said you missed school for it.
I did. No, I used to pretend I was ill just so I could watch that video. Surely you must have had that. Your favourite football VHS and you wanted to watch?
All QPR ones.
BMX, yeah. You were Julian, weren't you?
Yeah. Oh, come on, that's not nice.
I don't feel like being nice now. No.
We've got to the last sort of leg of the show and you've gone.
We've got no games to talk about on Saturday, so we have to get each other.
Yeah, instead of the opposition preview this weekend, it is the international break. And has this come at maybe the wrong time for QPR? Because you did get that win and they say, you know, momentum, it carries over. But 2 weeks off now. How do you feel about that, Gareth?
I'm kind of happy in a sense. I know they will have some time away from the club and off from football, which is great because we've got a few internationals, but loads. And I think the coaching at QPR at the moment is good enough, you know, in those breaks to actually implement some stuff. So Eustace Banfield, Warburton will actually do stuff. I don't always get an impression that clubs utilise that time away from the match day environment to improve some stuff, work
they
on
should
stuff.
Be.
Yeah, but I don't always get that impression they do. I think it's just a time to have a bit of a jolly, a bit of a break after a pretty intense time from back end of June going into end of August. I mean, 8 games in August, 3 in September. So it's all a bit weird in that respect as well.
Warburton doesn't seem like someone who will let him have a jolly, to use your words. I think he's going to be someone that's going to be on it. They're going to be wanting the chance to, you know, implement more of that philosophy, gel the players that they have signed, continue this good work, you know, carry on to hit the ground running. Don't want to let this go to waste, surely.
Well, as Andy Sinton said, there's more to come from this group of players. If they've set the foundation now, they've got a benchmark of what they're doing. On the training ground is where to right those wrongs, you know, those naive mistakes, those defensive errors, those penalties. Write it there, you know, make the fouls earlier up, higher up the pitch if you need to make them. But I think this is a good time for him to start working a little bit more.
We don't have many internationals, right? So Eze is off in the under-21s.
Yeah.
Who else? Naki Wells? Has Bermuda got a game?
I think so.
That's probably it, isn't
it? You're going to miss him.
Well, you mentioned him there. He's been upgraded from the under-20s to the under-21s. How pleased were you about that? Deserves that chance? Deserves that call-up?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to ask Andy, but I think you've seen a marked improvement this season from Eze. I think he looks a lot happier, a lot more comfortable, a lot more assured on the football pitch. And I think he had a lot of weight on his shoulders last year. It's probably take Freeman out of it from set plays, but a lot of creativity expectation was on Eze, and I think he hasn't got that this year. There's players around him, like Ilias Chair coming and playing 90 minutes. There's so much, and he's got that call up rightly. I think he was called up because some dropped out. I don't think he got.
Yeah, but he's still there on merit.
Like, yeah, he's there on merit. 100% there on merit.
Eddie Boyford needs some help, right? He lost all 3 games in the under-21, so he needs to shake something up.
And we're just chatting. I can't remember the last 20 under-21 we had player. We think Les Ferdinand was the last.
No, it was international.
Under-21, we can't think back at all. Trevor Sinclair, maybe, I don't know.
Let us know if you're listening.
Let us know, yeah.
0208 70 25 58. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio. Who was QPR's last England under-21 and full international?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Prize in the post.
He definitely
VHS, Betamax. If you've got videos, I should have looked through my back catalogue on my VHS of QPR and then I might have known a little bit more. But
Steve Gallen,
what?
He would have been under-21 England.
Really?
Not Ireland. Steve Gallen, sorry. Kevin Gallen. Sorry, get the right Gallen.
Steve Gallen, the
Miners. He was English, yeah. You know they're Irish, but he was English.
we've all gone, the heads are gone.
Left field now,
on the QPR Fan Show. But how much can that do for a player's confidence? Getting called up to that under-21 side, how much can that improve his game, playing with those players? And does he sort of come back a little bit, you know, springing the step almost to the QPR camp?
I think so. And I don't think, from what I've seen of him, he doesn't look like that sort of arrogant guy who's going to come back more boots.
bigger boots as a result.
But because I think it's good. I mean, for a start, we need it because we'll have to sell him at some point. So this only improves his price. But I also just think it improves his confidence because he had a great start to last season. Then a lot of people got on his back. And, you know, towards the end of the season, he came back again. And I think new manager, new formation, new team, new style. I think he's definitely his best again. And I just think it's just going to be a massive boost for his confidence. And we need that. We need a confident Eze playing well and feeling good in the way, in his own skin, because of the way he's playing, because he's, you know, he is a great player. He's a great prospect. I think I love him. But, you know, some people didn't. Some people didn't last season. and I think they're changing. Those doubters are now, you would hope, coming round, that he's a fantastic prospect for us.
I'm more annoyed about my Naki Wells Bermuda Triangle joke going over the radar.
I missed that.
I said he goes missing. But Julian, well done for checking himself on the Billy Big Boots comment, because you're on the yellow card for your profanity show, which is awful. Yeah. I think it's good for Eze to be in that environment. He's gonna be around very talented groups of players that he wants to be playing week in, week out, and it can't do his price tag any problems either. So we need to be thinking.
Don't say that. Don't wish it.
No. But it's inevitable.
It's where we are.
It's inevitable.
So we are.
And I think if Southampton come in again, this was Andy sent us out on the fence with your testing question, Julian. But I think that would be like something to say. You know, if you get £10 million for Eze in January from a Southampton or a Tottenham, or the two teams linked at this moment in time, do you take it?
And obviously, we're always keeping FFP in mind now, so that's going to help, isn't it?
Yeah, we've balanced the books really well. We've, you know, £8 million a player income transfer wise, which is unheard of really for QPR in some respects. How much we spend? £50,000 on Liam Kelly.
Probably,
that was it.
Yeah.
You know, we got £400,000 or £200,000 for Matt Ingram, or £400,000 I think it was from Hull. Thanks.
But we're paying. we're paying Wales's.
Yeah,
well.
But business-wise, we've made a good profit, and you know the likes of Eze, and then you got Chair. There's a chain. You know, we're talking about the Brentford business model before, and they got a chain of players. They got players thrown through to replace other players. So we've kind of got that as well now in some respects.
Well, I haven't spoke to you since that first victory against Stoke, Julian. You know, you said let's not get carried away. It is only one game. Well, it's now 6 games, 10 points. If you would have said that before the start of the season, would you have taken that? You'd have
totally.
Really pleased?
Yeah, totally. Because I thought we were going to. I mean, you know, it's been 4 seasons of 16 to 18. We thought we would probably get relegated. New manager. Complete squad overhaul, question marks over Warburton after Rangers and Forest, and a lot of those fans coming to us going the plan A and plan B. So you were a bit nervous about it, and then can you get 14 players to gel that quickly? So far I think it's been working really well, and as Andy Sinan said, I actually think it can only get better because these people are going to learn about
it's
how to play
it
together. Can you sing it for us?
I was this close. So has the expectation changed then now, Julian?
No, I still I'm more positive than after 1 year. Not going to get carried away.
It's that early doors in May though, don't listen to him.
Well, but it's much more positive. I can't see us getting relegated. Because I also think we have strength in depth. So even if one or two players go out, it's not like you're sitting there going, that player is critically important. I mean, the striker is important because you need to get goals.
Yeah.
But if we lost one of our centre-backs or one of our full-backs, there's people to come in and replace them.
Is it a little bit more a case of you might be looking up now rather than looking down, or not too early?
Oh, don't get carried away.
I'm in.
Just looking at the middle, aren't you? I said not anywhere between 9th and 14th is a good season. And I said 7 to 10 points was a good start. We've hit 10, which was
only outside the playoffs on goal difference. I know it's 6 games, but
I think we're looking at that position, and if we can get through, we've balanced the books, we've got young players bedded in now. Chair playing 90 minutes, I said earlier, is huge. Says so much about him and what they think of him. So I think
being Wednesday was important too, because if you looked at it, all of our points previously came from the bottom three teams. So now we've
only lost to the top ones.
Well, this is the QPR fan show. No game this week, but we'll see you next week.
This is Love Sport. Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings. Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.